This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about a new statewide collaboration made up of more than a dozen government, nonprofit, and economic development groups to help Indiana recover from the COVID-19 pandemic. If you have questions or comments for our panel today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail. Call us at 866-476-3881 and leave a quick question or comment. We will do our best to get it into the conversation. Again, 866-476-3881. We're joined now by four guests. Claudia Cummings is president and CEO of the Indiana Philanthropy Alliance. Welcome, Claudia.
Thanks, Matt. It's great to be here.
Lee Llewellyn is president and CEO of the Indiana Economic Development Association. Hi, Lee.
Hi, Matt. Thanks.
Carrie Lambert is executive director of the Indiana Tourism Association. Welcome to you, Carrie.
Yes, thank you for having me.
And finally, Lucinda Nord is executive director of the Indiana Library Federation. Hello, Lucinda.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
Claudia Cummings, we'll start with you. Can you tell us how this collaboration happened?
Well, Matt, it's kind of like before COVID and after COVID whenever we talk about our lives and our work. And before COVID, actually, Lee Llewellyn, who was here with us, had pulled some of us together to begin talking about how, as statewide associations and organizations, we could better pull together our members to work collaboratively out in the field. And our thought was that we would spend a year planning a project and maybe have an event toward the end. But COVID happened, and one day I was sitting at home early on in March and thinking to myself, boy, do I need a network of peers, and said, hey, Lee had pulled a few of us together. Let's see if we can add to it and get back together and put some energy around not just what I'm experiencing or what we're each experiencing as association executives, but also, and more importantly, what our members out in the field as community-based organizations are experiencing and how we can better support them in their collaborations. And that's kind of how it started.
So, I mean, as someone outside of this, you know, me, I was remarking to our producer before the show, I can't imagine a show where we would have the CEO of the Indiana Philanthropy Alliance, the CEO of the Indiana Economic Development Association, and the executive director of the Indiana Library Federation on the same show. This is quite the diversity, but there are other groups that are represented as well. Can you tell us a little bit about other groups that are involved? Give us a sense of the range.
Well, we were fortunate to be able to put a statement out recently to memorialize some of the core organizations that are engaged in this effort, but others have come through and partnered with us along the way as well. I hesitate to start to name off it. Well, actually, I will take a moment to name them all off because I think every one of these members brings something different to the table and illustrates the diversity of the types of organizations that are working locally in communities across the state every day to address COVID and all of Hoosier's daily community needs. So the groups that are involved that signed on to the statement are Accelerate Indiana Municipalities, the Association of Indiana Counties, the Indiana Association of Regional Councils, the Indiana Chamber Executives Association, Indiana Economic Development Association, the Indiana Library Federation. We also have some government leaders that are also participating with us. So the 21st Century Talent Regions, of course, the Indiana Philanthropy Alliance, the Indiana Public Health Association, the Indiana Tourism Association, Indiana United Ways, the Indiana Workforce Development Board Alliance, Prosperity Indiana, and Purdue Extension.
So a pretty big group and a wide range of perspectives, to be sure.
It absolutely is, and talent and resources as well as perspective. It's an incredibly broad-reaching group of organizations at the state level representing just as talented a group at the local levels as well.
Lee Llewellyn, we heard a little bit about the idea behind this effort, but as I understand it, you were among the initial group that kind of spearheaded this. What would you say the goal is?
Well, I think we started with one goal, and I think we've evolved as we've moved forward. So we started with really the idea that when we look at how communities are really trying to approach, you know, the notion of prosperity, how do we build prosperity in our communities? This is becoming very obvious that that's a very collaborative effort. I'll pick on my members in economic development for a minute. You know, maybe 10 or 15 years ago when we thought about attracting new investment to a community, you know, it was the general sense was you get an option on a cornfield and you wait for a factory to come and then everybody moves to your community for a job. And that has changed so dramatically in the last few years that now when we're talking about economic development, we're talking about how do we build houses so we can attract a talented workforce? How do we, you know, get more daycare so that people have opportunities to take the jobs? You know, we're talking about quality of life issues, and so we're collaborating on building trails and doing things like that. And so it became very obvious to me that it was a time for us to bring together some of those other partners, the chambers, the tourism associations, the community foundations, libraries, to really talk about how, as the associations serving all of those individuals around the state, how are we providing support for them? How are we recognizing sort of the challenges and opportunities that that collaboration presents, and how can we do a better job of helping to foster that? Then after the pandemic hit, I think as I was talking to some of my members, you know, they were expressing to me, you know, we're used to talking to business people about business problems. And now we're in the middle of this situation where the problems that people are dealing with have become so diverse. So I may be talking to a small business person in my community who, yes, you know, may want the payroll protection plan support and may be looking for other business loans, but now he or she are having mental health issues and they're looking for support there. They're trying to figure out how they can help their employees not losing their homes. And we just don't know how to answer all those questions. So that's where we started bringing all the other groups together to say, how do we provide support for the multiphasic problems that so many of our constituents are having, and how do we come together to support that?
Lee, how much of an issue is it that different groups in the state sometimes end up doing what's essentially the same work? I mean, is it mainly an efficiency problem?
It's really not the same work. I mean, the model that we've talked about a lot as we've been doing all of this is the notion that, you know, there are lots of different, all of our different groups had puzzle pieces. And what we've been trying to do is to try to help everybody visualize, well, what does that finished picture look like so we know where each of those individual puzzle pieces fit in the big picture. And really what our folks are doing is not competing, and it's not overlapping, it's complementary. It's really looking at how those different platforms really work together and complement one another to make a full picture.
Carrie Lambert, can you tell us what the Indiana Tourism Association does outside of the context of this collaboration?
Absolutely. So our association is made up of primarily county-level tourism association, or county-level tourism bureaus, in each county and community. So Visit Indy, Visit South Bend, Mishawaka, Visit Evansville, and then also some anchor attractions in the state, such as Fair Oaks Farms and Holiday World. And we serve primarily two resources for them, and that is professional development. So we hold meetings throughout the year on all things related to tourism and the operations that goes into that. And then we're also have an advocacy arm. So we have a lobbyist that's making sure that any kind of legislative bill or discussion that's happening that tourism is considered when applicable. And then we work alongside with, there is a statewide Visit Indiana, some people are familiar with that, that has a website and a travel guide, and we kind of work alongside them. We traditionally say they do the marketing and we kind of do the back of the house, the business side of tourism. So yeah, that kind of gives you a little bit of an idea of what we focus on.
Well, I can see several reasons why you might want to get involved in this collaboration, but I want to hear it from you. Why would you say that the Tourism Association wanted to be on this big group?
Absolutely. There's actually many reasons. Probably the primary one that jumps out to me is so many of the other organizations that were represented in this statewide coalition are pretty much talking to the people within their own community, which is obviously very important. We're one of the few organizations that talks to people outside of the community that's going to come in and experience the community. So we bring the perspective of what visitors might be thinking or processing through while they're coming into the community and what their experience is like. And traditionally, the definition of a tourist is anyone that travels 50 miles or more. And one of the things, because when I first talk to people about tourism in Indiana, sometimes that's a leap for them, because when they hear tourism, they think Florida beaches or Alaska or Hawaii. But tourism is an economic driver here in Indiana. People travel throughout the state and into this state to really experience the things that we have to offer, not just our very urban areas, but our state parks, our trails, and we do have beaches ourselves, right, up in Lake Michigan. So we bring to the table to kind of give that outside perspective that is a very, very important piece of, as we're going through the pandemic, it's a very important piece to consider, because a lot of what those outsiders bring into the community actually comes down to dollars and cents and an economic impact. So we need to understand that piece of the puzzle. But then we also recognize that a good place to visit is also a good place to live, and that the inverse of that is true. A good place to live is a good place to visit. And so they work in tandem. So when we have experiences like a Conner Prairie, or you think of a Schintz confectionery in Clark County down in southern Indiana, that doesn't just exist for the people that live there. It exists for the people that come in from outside of the community. And so we can kind of help bridge that gap and that conversation of what it means for residents, but also what it means for people that are coming in from the outside to experience it.
And Lucinda Nord, we'll get with you right after the break. We are talking about a new statewide collaboration to help Indiana recover from the pandemic, among other things, of course. And if you have questions or comments for the show, you can let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail. We'd love to hear your voice in the conversation this afternoon. You can call us at 866-476-3881 and leave a message, 866-476-3881, if you have questions for our panel. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about a new statewide collaboration to help Indiana recover from the pandemic. And we welcome your questions and comments. We're on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. We have with us Claudia Cummings, President and CEO of the Indiana Philanthropy Alliance, Lee Llewellyn, President and CEO of the Indiana Economic Development Association, Carrie Lambert, Executive Director of the Indiana Tourism Association. And the one guest we have not yet heard from is Lucinda Nord, Executive Director of the Indiana Library Federation. So, Lucinda, can you tell us what the Federation does and how or why you got involved in this big collaboration?
Well, the Indiana Library Federation is the statewide nonprofit association of academic, public, school, and special libraries, and all the people that work and volunteer in those libraries. And so libraries naturally are collaborators as a part of their educational mission, as a part of the work that they do enrichment, and then that sort of community anchor institution. So it was just natural that we would work, we already work with all of these associations' members at the local level, so it was just sort of natural that we would partner, because we were already doing that at the local level from the time of the stay-at-home order in March with the pandemic, where libraries had to close their facilities to prevent community spread. We knew that libraries were already doing some of the work to really meet the changing needs of the communities, whether that was, you know, helping people apply for unemployment and SNAP, or starting to ramp up Wi-Fi so that folks could have access to the internet, just all kinds of resources. So it was just a natural way to collaborate.
So when the lockdown started, the big stay-at-home orders and things like that, and when many businesses were closed, yet you had these people who needed the help of libraries. What were you able to do? I mean, how were you impacted when all of that came down?
So as I mentioned, while the facilities had to close, you know, librarians and staff in libraries pivoted very quickly. So just to give you an example, you know, one of the first immediate needs that was underscored was the digital divide in Indiana, that, you know, 1 in 6 or 1 in 7 Hoosiers does not have access to the Internet, and many more can't afford it. So libraries amped up their Wi-Fi to their parking lot, and schools and libraries put Wi-Fi on their school buses and bookmobiles and drove them into communities so that people could do their remote work and their e-learning without coming in contact with each other in this new socially distanced environment. You know, and necessity is the mother of invention. Those of us who remember the recession of 10 years ago knew that people would have needs. So, for example, you know, down in Gibson County, the library there recognized that their neighbors were got laid off by some of the plants. And so they immediately, we worked to train hundreds of library workers with FSSA at the state about how to apply for SNAP and TANF and health coverage and how to apply for unemployment with the Department of Workforce Development so that we could find a way to do that in a socially distanced environment. So just lots of ways to just meet the needs that were there that we saw, and then those needs changed over the course of the stay-at-home order and then the reopening plan.
Lee Llewellyn, this collaboration, this effort is big, it's broad, it's complex. But if we could boil it down to one or two big problems that it's trying to solve, what would they be, would you say?
Well, so I think we've touched upon, and I think one of your questions really touched upon the idea that we have many of these different organizations that were in the communities. Many of them were operating, you know, with their constituents. They were operating sort of within their defined mission. But in some cases, you know, we may have been aware of those other organizations, but we really hadn't worked together before. And so one of the first challenges we had that we heard from our members and we heard from our constituents around the state was, well, we know about these other groups, but we really don't know what they do and how we need to come together. So one of the first projects that we worked on as a coalition was to create a community recovery workbook. And this is a very bare bones, very minimal kind of document, but it was designed to help those groups and organizations from elected officials, the not-for-profits, you know, the schools and libraries and a lot of those institutions in the community to come together more quickly to assess what their strengths were, what sort of assets and knowledge they brought to the table to help them more quickly organize themselves and develop a plan to hopefully speed the recovery back as things begin to open up. So I think that was one of the first things, that just talking amongst ourselves and recognizing how much we didn't know about one another as the members of the coalition, then translated to how do we help our members more quickly mobilize, learn their strengths, identify, and move forward. So we published that community recovery workbook. It's available pretty much, I think, on every website of all of the members of the coalition so that people can download it. We know of a number of communities that have started using that as a way to get organized. And I think the other thing that we recognized was there was just so much information coming out from so many different sources. Certainly, we put together a COVID-19 webpage with listing all those resources, and you end up with hundreds of links. So soon we will be publishing a web portal that we've always called No Wrong Door, but it will be a collaboration that will be a single entry point for information about business assistance, information about personal and family assistance, so that a chamber director, a library, a United Way, anybody in the coalition will have access to that and be able to help people more quickly get to the answers, whether it's business, whether it's personal, and hopefully better manage that abundance of information that came out.
We're talking about a new statewide collaboration of more than a dozen government, nonprofit, and economic development groups to help Indiana recover from the COVID-19 pandemic. And Claudia, I mean, it sounds like before this big collaboration, there was some collaboration, but it was a little fragmented. The communication was between, you know, one or two groups. And how much, I guess, communication has there been traditionally between those groups that would probably benefit from a big collaboration like this before it actually happened? How much were you talking?
Yeah, well, as associations, I don't think we were. And so I think there's been a huge leap forward in terms of our ability to bring together our collective resources and then better disseminate consistent messaging through to our members across the state so that they're hearing similar or the same information and being able to act upon it accordingly in their own communities. Locally, I will tell you that collaborations have been alive and well in Indiana for decades. I mean, we are Hoosiers. We do, by our nature, come together, work together, and build community. I think what the benefit of this is that folks may have a better understanding of who all the players are that they might want to engage and what assets those players have to bring to the table so that we can best leverage our limited resources. As the Indiana Philanthropy Alliance, our members are often looked upon as the financial resources for the states, throughout the state and in local communities. And our members bring far more to the table than just their financial resources. And so this has been an amazing opportunity for us to bring some of our convening tools to the table in communities. It's also a great way to elevate some of our public policy voice, as well as some of the work that our members do in communities with regard to dissemination of information regarding needs and opportunities. So it's been, I think, an amazing opportunity for us to elevate the message of our members to a wider audience.
Lee Llewellyn, could I get maybe a specific example of something that only could have happened when all of these groups started working together, I guess, in respect to the efforts around the pandemic?
Sure. Well, early on in the process through this coalition, we were able to identify a resource. Some of your listeners may remember Richard Florida. A number of years ago, he published the book, The Rise of the Creative Class. And we became aware of the fact that he and a colleague had put together a 10-point recovery sort of plan for communities. This was something that was originally sort of targeted toward just chambers of commerce. But we were able to secure the services of Dr. Florida and have a webinar that we presented to all of our members across the state. And we were able to do this, secure sponsorship so that we could provide that discussion via a webinar for at no charge to all of our members and really begin the discussion about how, you know, this very specific collaboration and putting together community recovery plans could develop over time. And so I think that was one of the first things that I think we did together as a group. But it was also bringing in sort of a nationally recognized speaker, someone who has done that level of community research, but then also communicate across our memberships of, you know, we are all in this together, and this is an opportunity for us to collectively hear this message. And it was fortunately put in sort of a positive context of, you know, yes, this is a challenging circumstance, but, you know, here are some positive steps that we can all take together to get out of this. And so that, I think, was a very positive first step and gave us all an opportunity to really begin thinking about what are the possibilities of all of us working together.
Carrie Lambert, you're the
–
oh, go right ahead, please. Oh,
So at the very local level, you know, when you ask about, you know, non-traditional partners coming together, you know, if you think back to early in the stay-at-home order, there was a real shortage of personal protective equipment. And so many people were not aware that many public libraries offer 3D printers. And they fired up their 3D printers and started printing masks. And they had sewing clubs through their maker spaces. So they began sewing lots of masks and making masks and face shields for members of the first responder community and the health provider community. So, for example, Kendallville Public Library, you know, could not keep up with the demand of supplying their first responders in their local hospitals in northeastern Indiana. And that's just one example of sort of non-traditional partners coming together.
Carrie Lambert, you're the executive director of the Indiana Tourism Association. I mean, what surprising collaborations have you seen, I guess, amid this, to repeat the word, collaboration? I mean, there are a lot of different groups involved here. And have you been kind of surprised at what each group has to offer to the other, even if before you saw very little, if not zero, connection?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would echo what we're hearing being said from all of us today. But there are people on this call, there were people in our coalition that I maybe didn't know that this other estate association existed. I had never crossed paths with them before, but found that it was really helpful to know what they were doing locally so that I could share it with our members. A lot of our tourism entities had websites and marketing services ready to go that ended up having to pull back and stop because of the stay-at-home order. And we saw a few of our communities that took their marketing people and said, okay, we're not doing our individual. One of the examples I'm thinking of is in Wabash County. She cut all of, you know, she couldn't do any of her marketing buys. So she took her marketing person who was well-versed in how to use social media and started getting her out to businesses to do one-on-one training within their community to say, let me help you on kind of creating a plan of how you're communicating, when you're open, if you're open, how you're opening, all of those types of things. I think back to some of our early calls and, you know, I would come up with something that would maybe be, hey, how are we going to figure out downtown parking for all these curbside services? And then somebody else would say, oh my gosh, I hadn't even thought about that because we're just trying to figure out how people can get an online system of ordering. And so it kind of helped all of us realize the different views that we were looking at these problems. There were, you know, a variety of challenges, and we could all step in and maybe help each other. One person would have a member that would say, hey, I have the Wi-Fi here, and you have the expertise on building this site there, and let's get everybody talking to each other. And for us to be able to have that conversation at the large statewide level really helped us to be able to implement it on the local level. I even had a few times where members would reach out, and I mean, as we all can recall back to when this CARES Act funding came through and the scramble that happened, right, of, okay, what do I really qualify for, and what does this look like? And on one of our calls, we heard, you know, there are some funds that are out there that are not being utilized. Work together in your communities, work with your cities and your mayors and your downtowns to come up with a proposal. So what I did then was let my members know, hey, these are some funds that you might not be aware of, but if you collaborate with your Main Street and your economic development and your chamber and work together on a proposal, there might be some funds there that you can have access to. And so just, you know, more communication, we always know this, more communication is better. And so being able to be a part of that system that we could talk about all of this and then disseminate that out, I think was just really, really helpful. And just seeing how we were leaning on each other's expertise and the different pieces that we could bring to the table, which is basically what, you know, Lee mentioned, the recovery workbook. That was what our goal was with that piece, was how do you identify the players in your community and the strengths that they're bringing? They might not have used it for this broad of a reason in the past, but now they have the opportunity to step in and really be a great resource on a different level with existing experience that they have.
Claudia Cummings, go right ahead, please, Lee.
Yeah, just a couple of things. So one of the things I think we all became, I think every person became much more aware of just health and medical assets in our communities. And two examples, and I think one to Carrie's members, you know, as we saw much of the hospitality and tourism industry sort of close down, you know, many of the hotels pivoted to make themselves available to first responders, you know, who weren't able to maybe go home because they had been perhaps, you know, in contact with somebody with COVID-19. And so a lot of those hotels pivoted to provide opportunities for those first responders to stay there and started providing food for first responders and for others. The other is just, again, how we suddenly all became just immediately aware of our health assets. And I would talk about something that happened in Henry County around Newcastle, where you had one county health administrator that was desperately trying to figure out how to respond to all of the businesses that were trying to figure out how to respond, how to provide social distancing for essential employees. And our economic development professional out there hosted Zoom meetings so that that person could be in contact with multiple businesses at once.
Lee, we'll be right back with our live guests after a quick break. We're talking about a new statewide collaboration to help Indiana recover from the pandemic. And we're back in 90 seconds with the conversation. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelzer. Back now to our discussion on a new statewide collaboration to help Indiana recover from the pandemic. As always, we want your questions and comments. We're on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave a voicemail at 866-476-3881, 866-476-3881. We have with us Lee Llewellyn, President and CEO of the Indiana Economic Development Association, Carrie Lambert, Executive Director of the Indiana Tourism Association, Lucinda Nord, Executive Director of the Indiana Library Federation, and Claudia Cummings, President and CEO of the Indiana Philanthropy Alliance. So, Claudia Cummings, can you tell us what the No Wrong Door Project is?
Yeah, the No Wrong Door Project is one where we're working to ensure that Hoosiers that are in need of a service or an asset are able to go to a singular portal to determine what the best next steps are. We've been working on this particular project pretty much since we first gathered together, and one of our members, Blair Milo, who is Governor Holcomb's Secretary of Career Connections and Talent, had been working on a workforce development type tool similar to our No Wrong Door concept, which helps folks understand specifically where to go for training or other services they might need as they may face unemployment. Through that engagement with Blair, we were then connected with some other state resources, and the project has been moving forward.
Lee, let's talk a little bit more about economic development. What would you say it's like right now? What's the state of it in Indiana?
Well, I think what we're seeing, we are still seeing some interesting projects are still coming through the pipeline. I think companies outside the state are still looking at Indiana as a good source, a good place to relocate and expand to. But I think we're probably seeing probably two extremes. We're seeing that a lot of our manufacturers who were considered, essential employers have kept working. They're calling people back, but they're primarily focusing on a skilled workforce. And what we're seeing then on the other extreme is that many of our unskilled workforce, people who were perhaps in more service industry and more like the restaurants, retail, who may have been permanently displaced, are going to need some reskilling, are going to need some more education and training to enable them to get back into the workforce. So at the top end, we're seeing manufacturing, we're seeing is recovering to some degree. We are still seeing a lot of expansions among those companies. But again, they're looking for a very specific kind of workforce, and unfortunately, many of the people who've been displaced are not going to meet the requirements of those companies, and so our next challenge is going to be really focusing in on training, retraining, upskilling a lot of those folks so we can get them back into the workforce.
Has the pandemic, Lee, forced the evolution of economic development in any way, would you say?
No, I'm not. I don't think so. I mean, I think, you know, that evolution has been occurring really for the last 10 years. That, as I said earlier in the broadcast, you know, we really have seen that it's become a much more complex and sophisticated activity. You know, and we've adopted the mantra going for the rest of this year and going into next that economic development is more important than ever. And what we mean by that is we've heard, as we've talked to a number of legislators, state legislators, you know, they said, you know, we're not going to be able to spend our way out of the economic damage that has been created by the pandemic. We're going to have to grow our way out of that. And that really is what economic development is all about. So the evolution was already occurring. This is really doing more of what we've already done. It's focusing on Indiana's assets. It's making sure that we have a talented, trained workforce, because that really is what drives economic development now, which is why, you know, we are concerned. Why, you know, and I'll go back to something else of why Carrie's association and why her members have become so critical for economic development. One, yes, they are, you know, people are spending money when they come to those attractions. But we've started working with the tourism bureaus and being able to talk about what are a community's assets, why do people want to visit here, why would you want to live here. That becomes part of how we partner with the tourism bureaus for attracting new residents to come to Indiana, and that's a critical part of economic development still.
Carrie Lambert, I mean, we've talked a few times on this show already about tourism being impacted by the pandemic. And a few weeks ago, we had on representatives from the Hoosier Hospitality Initiative, just as an example. So we've talked kind of in a broad sense. Can you zoom us in a little bit more, give us a bit of a detailed view of what has happened to tourism in Indiana? What are the most significant changes we've seen?
That's a whole hour show in of itself.
Sure it is. I know it is.
I think that it would be safe to say that some of our communities have been decimated by what has happened over the course of the last 6 months. And, you know, a lot of that is pandemic related. Sadly, places like Indianapolis, you know, dealing with the protests and the riots that happened earlier this year have also created kind of what I would call a double whammy for them in how they present themselves as a community that we all, I mean, I don't know if any of you have driven down to downtown Indy, but it's a very different experience than what it was, you know, 10, 11, 12 months ago. And so, you know, on one hand, I see, you know, the businesses and the hotels and the restaurants and the actual real life struggles that they are trying to make day to day to even keep their doors open. I think about places like Holiday World who were able to open this summer, albeit under some strict capacity regulations. And what they're seeing is the overhead to open a place like that is so cumbersome with only limited amount of guests. And I don't believe they've hit what the percentages they've been able to. But, you know, how do you continue to employ these Hoosiers and create this experience with limited, you know, feet walking into your gates every day, right? And so then what that means is businesses are shutting down. Budgets are getting cut. However, we still have places that people feel very excited about visiting in the state of Indiana. I talked to places like Brown County or some of our state park communities, and they're almost having this interesting challenge of we have so many people coming and trying to experience this. There's safety precautions, and that's kind of where that Hoosier Hospitality Promise that you mentioned comes into play, is how we communicate how to effectively travel and not only be a good resident, but be a good visitor. We have a lot of communities that are lake communities in northern Indiana that welcome, you know, quite a few visitors to come in and stay in their lake houses. But that brings in, you know, a lot of people that don't typically live there. And what does that mean? And how can we get them to mask up and things like that? And so, you know, I'm spending most of my days right now talking to communities that they are working on really, really low budgets. But they also know that travel is something that people still, at the end of the day, is vitally important. And I'm not talking about anymore, because I think we all know this international travel, this large travel is not necessarily where people are setting their sights right now. And it's what we did learn with the, I think Lucinda mentioned the 2008 recession earlier, what we learned in the tourism industry after that recession was that tourism bounced back fairly quickly, one of the quickest industries to bounce back. And for us in the Midwest, we had this wonderful place where we sat where people weren't getting on planes immediately after 9/11, but they'd get in their car and drive. And we are the Crossroads of America, right? So we now have this opportunity again where we can say, look it, we're here in the middle of the country. We have wonderful low density experiences. We have great authentic small towns. We want to welcome you to them, but we want to do it in a safe way for our residents, a safe way for our visitors. And so there is a silver lining, but it's a silver lining around a really gloomy cloud. And I think that's the challenge that we're trying to tell people. We have things that we can do to help push us forward, but we also need you to recognize when we had hotels shut down for 6 months, in some communities, hotels that are still shut down, when we've lost restaurants, when we have attractions that are limping through the season, that's going to take its toll, and we need to be prepared to support and help them as we're moving forward and looking to what tourism looks like in Indiana. And then I want to touch on one other thing that you had mentioned earlier about how we view, I think you asked this with Lee, and Lee did such a great job of talking about how our two industries work together. I often tell people tourism in the past used to 15, 20 years ago, okay, here's my visitor guide, maybe here's my website if I'm really savvy. But in the last 10 to 15 years, what our tourism entities have really focused on is how they can be a piece of a vibrant community, how they can really enter in with their economic development, with their chambers, with all of these wonderful organizations that we have brought together at the statewide level and create a quality of life that not only benefits those coming in, but benefits the residents. And they're becoming more of community ambassadors now than ever before. And that it's not just about the people that have driven those 50 miles, but it's about anyone that's experiencing it. And this has given us that opportunity to flourish that and kind of what I would say is a little bit of a new light and has given us a little bit of a bigger megaphone to talk to people about that.
We're talking about a new statewide collaboration to help Indiana recover from the pandemic. And Claudia Cummings, what changes in the philanthropy world have you seen, if any, since the pandemic started? Can you tell us about some of your members?
Yeah, so our members have been incredibly engaged. Immediately following the onset of the crisis, they stood up relief funds across the state. We had folks like Buckingham Foundation here in Indianapolis that's affiliated with the Alexander Hotel, partnering with Second Helpings to cook meals and take them to those who needed food or to house healthcare workers that needed to be separated, as Lee mentioned. We also had folks like up in Warsaw, the K21 Foundation, Kosciuszko County Community Foundation, Zimmer Biomet, United Way, they all got together to not only establish a relief fund in the immediate aftermath of the closures, but now we're working on an economic development strategy to support tourism across the state. We have a group here in Indianapolis, Richard M. Fairbanks, and Lilly Corporate Foundation, and some others that have launched a $2.8 million initiative for e-learning for Marion County schools. About 25% of students lacked internet access at home, and so they were able to direct over $1.5 million immediately toward that effort. Our members have been incredibly creative in the work that they've been doing in the immediate aftermath, and now as we start to live with COVID, such as within the schools, in the e-learning example I just gave, but we're also looking to the future. As we continue to talk about economic development, workforce development, unemployment, job training, the Indiana Philanthropy Alliance has stood up a cross-sector collaborative focused on building Indiana's workforce in a coordinated way through philanthropic efforts. And we have members not just of IPA, like we have some really strong members engaged in workforce development like Strata and Clues Fund and JP Morgan Chase, but we also have cross-sector work going on because in that collaborative we have Kevin Breniger of the Indiana Chamber or Blair Milo from the Governor's Cabinet, and we're working together to determine what some best next steps are and then how philanthropy can move forward in a coordinated fashion to address those needs. So there is so much activity, I could take up the whole show, but our members are energetic and I won't use the word pleased, but honored, I'd say, to respond to the crisis and help prepare Indiana for its comeback. And so philanthropy is here, and I'm just glad to be able to share a little bit with you today about that.
Lee Llewellyn, has working with the state government gone well so far? I mean, are they as easy to communicate with as they need to be?
Yeah, we've had a very good working relationship, I think, you know, and with the caveat that we all, I mean, everybody that's been involved every step of the way is just overwhelmed. You know, I've referred to this whole process as, you know, we're moving down a very long, dark tunnel with a very dim flashlight. And so I think everybody's had the same challenges. You know, we've talked about, you know, the Blair Milo has been a part of our coalition. We've worked with a number of those entities at state to try to make sure that we're adapting their resources. So, you know, with the caveat that everybody is running flat out, people are overwhelmed with sort of the novelty of what we're dealing with. And under the circumstance, you know, we've had very good working relationships with the state agencies. And, you know, we know that going into next year, as we start a budget session with the General Assembly, there are going to be some very, very difficult decisions that everybody has to have in terms of what's going to happen and what's the state of state and local budgets. So I think everybody is bracing for that, but I think we're also very well aware that to a very large extent, you know, we are all trying to work together for the same thing, and that's really the what's best for the state of Indiana.
Carrie Lambert, in our last minute, do enough communities in Indiana know about the assistance that's available to them?
I think that I said earlier, communication is so important, and over communication can't be done enough with this. And I think that even with great programs like that we have within the statewide coalition, there are still probably going to be a pocket somewhere that maybe we haven't gotten to explain what all the relief and opportunities there are out there. And so that's why opportunities like this are really important for us. That's why for us to be talking as the statewide coalition and sharing information out to our members is vitally important, so that we can make sure as many people are aware of what is available out there and that people are fully taking advantage. I think there's been a lot of that happening, and I think a lot of it is due to these conversations. I think that we need to continue on that forward progress and just keep banging the drum and letting people know about what is available, especially as we're heading into these fall and winter months and into next year when, you know, I think things will get a little quieter just by nature of the season, at least within our industry. But as we're gearing up, we just need to continue to explain to people, here's where there's assistance and help, and here's where we can help, you know, get you connected with the right people at the right time.
Well, I want to thank all of our guests for taking the time today and great work on the collaboration. Claudia Cummings, President and CEO of the Indiana Philanthropy Alliance. Lee Llewellyn, President and CEO of the Indiana Economic Development Association. Carrie Lambert, Executive Director of the Indiana Tourism Association. And Lucinda Nord, Executive Director of the Indiana Library Federation. Thanks to all of you. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Adam Gross is our technical director. We're on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. I'm Matt Pelser. This is All In. Thanks for listening.